Chapter 1. To Whom Much is Given. Early Spring, 1812. They are gone. The first fiery rays of daybreak blazed behind the marble cherubim guarding the graves. Despair contorted Fitzwilliam Darcy's face, threatening to defeat his last fragile threads of control. He gulped in the morning mist, fists balled, arms shaking. Ragged gasps tore from his chest. He opened his eyes and blinked the burning moisture away. Backlit against the dawn, two headstones filled his view. The one on the right listed slightly, its inscriptions half covered by a creeping vine that, come summer, would erupt in delicate white flowers. The other gravestone still stood solidly upright. The neat soil mounding before it bore no new growth, though if one looked closely, the barest signs of green were just becoming visible. From a window of the nearby stone church, John Bradley contemplated the familiar vigil. He shrugged on his coat, fingers pausing over the threadbare patch at the elbow, and reached for his wide-brimmed hat. Cane in hand, he shuffled toward the heavy door. The chill wind buffeted him as he stepped into the morning. They stood together silently, taking in the sunrise. "Someday I must take my place here beside them." Shadows masked the inscriptions. "George Darcy, departed this life Anno Domini 1811. Lady Anne Da." Vines obscured the rest.
"I would prefer a situation in the shade. Over there, I think."
Bradley pointed to a grassy spot near the church wall.
"You cannot rid yourself of me, you know. I held you in my arms to baptize you into the church, and I will keep watch over you, even from there."
Darcy chuckled, but his shoulders slumped and he stared into his empty palms.
"I miss him, Mr. Bradley. Father always knew what to do. Everyone trusted him."
He rubbed the back of his neck, sighing out the emptiness that churned within. "I trusted him." A cold gust blew through the graveyard. The iron gate clanged, the sound echoing against the stones.
"How can I take his place as master?"
His guts twisted, the words burning his throat.
"Your father doubted himself, too."
"He did?" "Many evenings over tea, we talked of his misgivings."
The corners of Bradley's mouth lifted and his eyes twinkled.
"He had an excessive fondness for my cook's shortbread."
"He went to you to find wisdom. Father valued your advice and insight above all others."
Bradley dipped his head, blinking.
"I am not like him."
Darcy grimaced and swallowed hard against the rising bile.
"I lack his wisdom, his discernment." "But you were given good principles, the ones your father stood on."
The wind whipped his coattails and scoured his face. "Are they enough?"
"He found them so."
Bradley clapped his shoulder. They locked in a penetrating gaze. Finally, Darcy released a deep breath. A slow smile spread, but did not quite reach his eyes.
"Join me for breakfast this morning. I must mediate a tenant quarrel today and need my father's wisdom."
"I would be honored."
They strolled to the manor, the gate jangling behind them. Late Spring, 1812. Darcy settled into the faded upholstery, drinking in the soothing scents of firewood, books, and leather. The fireplace crackled and flickered hypnotically, mesmerizing him until a groaning creak disturbed his repose.
"Your father preferred that chair, too,"
Bradley laughed, shouldering the door open, a tray of tea and biscuits balanced in his hands.
"I remember sitting on this rug, looking at the picture books you kept in the basket by the fire."
His fingers drifted across the frayed fabric.
"I still have those."
Bradley parked the tray and turned to the bookcase. His hand hovered a moment, and he plucked a book from a haphazard stack. He gave it to Darcy, winking. "You amused yourself with them for hours, while your father and I talked." Darcy flipped through the pages, his fingertips tracing the pictures. Lips parted, he smiled, brushing his knuckles along his jaw. When he came to the end, he shut the book and helped himself to tea. "The good Lord willing, some day another generation of Darcys will play on my hearthrug." Bradley relaxed into his chair, propping his feet on the well-worn footstool. "So, how did you find Rosings Park this year?" His teacup hid a mischievous smile. "I would rather be here than in any of Rosings' well-fitted drawing-rooms," he snorted and stretched his legs. "My aunt is much as she ever was. I have been honoured by the distinguished lady's presence but twice. The first time she advised me on how best to advance in the church. The second she was decidedly put out because I had not followed her guidance." "Be assured your disobedience continues to disturb her ladyship to this day. She is not what you would call a forgiving soul." Darcy scooped up several pieces of shortbread. Reverently raising them to his lips, he caught the crumbs in his palm. "She cannot understand why you refused her offer." Bradley's cup clacked softly against its saucer. He clasped his hands loosely and leaned forward on his knees. "I love this parish and its people. I cannot leave them any more than I could cut off my own legs." His eyes glittered. "A living, even at Rosings, is nothing to me. But taking the sinecure would mean leaving my people in a stranger's care." "So you sacrificed yourself, giving up a secure future in favour of your parish, despite the fact you are merely a curate." Darcy scooped the last crumbs into his mouth, brushed his palms, and folded his arms across his chest. "Our vicar, Mr. Harris, never showed the parishioners such concern. He is at Kimpton only as often as needed to fulfil the terms of the benefice, yet he did not deign to allow you the use of the parsonage." "Harris is a good man, though I admit few call him friend. What he does is valuable. I am grateful he allows me to stay here, instead of replacing me with someone younger and more like himself." "That will not happen." The last violet rays of sunset caught Darcy's eyes as he tried to hide his scowl. "I will not leave my parish. It is far too high a price for a living. My needs are well met as curate, thanks to a certain family's generosity," he winked, reaching for another biscuit, "and the good Lord's grace." Darcy rubbed his knuckles across lips that gathered into a frown. "Would you take Kimpton if it were vacant?" He hunched forward and held his teacup, fixing on the amber liquid within. "I had a letter waiting for me on my return from Rosings." A heavy breath escaped. "Mr. Harris died a little over a week ago." Bradley winced, the half-eaten shortbread forgotten in his grasp. "While visiting with his sister in town, he took a cold that settled into his lungs. He declined rapidly, and it was just a matter of days. She and her son were at his side when he passed." "I am glad he was not alone." Bradley removed his glasses and rubbed the back of his hand across his eyes. A soft silence descended, punctuated by the popping fire and crunching biscuits. An unspoken demand hung in the air, filling the room with crackling tension. "So, will you take Kimpton now?" Darcy rested his chin on his fist and waited. Bradley's shoulders bowed. He drummed his fingers and tapped his heel. Finally, he sprang up and wandered to the window. "It is a great deal more than I need. Have you not taught me a worker is worth his wage?" A wry smile slowly pulled at the corner of Bradley's lips. "So you have been listening." He braced himself on the windowsill, extending his legs, ankles crossed. "I will accept," he held out his hand to restrain Darcy's enthusiastic response. "However,"
you must first demonstrate you are able to do more than repeat my lessons back to me. What have you done with that principle, and what have you seen come from it?"
Crossing his arms over his chest, he leaned against the glass.
"Any other man would jump at the offer and be done with it."
Darcy threw up his hands and then laced them behind his head and stared into nothing. Bradley shrugged.
"Well, there is an interesting conversation indeed. Let me count my benefits."
He leaned forward, squeezing his temples with his elbows.
"I have acquired Lady Catherine's contempt, for I allow you far too much influence."
He threw his head high. His voice became shrill and nasal to match.
"The lower classes put wealth to nefarious uses. Such means should be reserved for more noble purposes."
Turning to the fireplace, he stroked his jaw.
"Are the many long lectures from Lord Matlock to be considered among my gains? He warns me I will give away Pemberley's future."
His chin fell and his shoulders squared. He inhaled hard and continued in a contrabass rumble.
"Who are you, Fitzwilliam Darcy, to question tradition? How can Bradley condone such ideas? His sworn duty is to uphold the social order."
Forehead wrinkling, Bradley hurried to him.
"What have you done?"
"After your eloquent preaching on the topic, I scoured the estate's books. Despite Father's goodness and benevolence, at the end I found little difference between Rosings and Pemberley. He was not as liberal a master as I believed. So," he glanced up, "your admonishments ringing in my ears, I chose a different path." Bradley pulled the footstool close and sat, his gaze not leaving Darcy. "After collecting the rents at Michaelmas, I purchased 2 seed drills, one for the home farm, and one for use among the leaseholders. After much research, and on the advice of Mr. Cupperton, I invested in new strains of livestock. The farmers may use the stud animals for 1 part in 10 of their profits. Since my steward discovered many houses in need of major repairs, I did not increase their rents for the coming year."
"And the tenants' response?"
Bradley chewed his lip. A lopsided grin gradually lit Darcy's face.
"Well, a number of pub fights in Lambton have been credited to my decisions."
The smile broadened with the deepening creases on Bradley's brow.
"I am told a villager criticized the master of Pemberley, and several of our people took offense."
Bradley chortled, holding his belly.
"I cannot say anything for certain until the harvest, however. All signs point to profits well above my outlay.
At least for now, it appears you were correct."
Darcy's gaze drifted toward the window.
"Uncle Matlock will credit quality seed and excellent weather for my success, not the work of good men." "Lord Matlock holds to the traditional ideas of men and their worth."
Tension flooded Darcy's limbs, and he had to move. He jumped up and stalked along the fireplace.
"My worthy uncle believes a man's birthright makes him significant, but what he produces of his own efforts is sullied because he has dirtied his hands."
"This troubles you?"
"Father taught me my worth came from being a Darcy, the next master of Pemberley. He insisted that those of our circle were more important than anyone else."
He stopped, grasped the mantle, dragged in several deep breaths, and then shoved himself away.
"But such would not be the destiny of my dear playmate, George. No, being merely a steward's son, he will never suffer the high opinion of society."
He clutched his temples and huffed.
"I am certain Father wished George had been born his son."
He kicked the rug and slouched against the bookcase. Head drooping, he searched the titles but found nothing. Bradley grimaced.
"I am at a loss to understand. What makes a great man, Mr. Bradley?"
He wrapped his arms around his chest, staring at the worn rug.
"Back at Cambridge, I thought it right to measure him by the nobility of his line and the size of his estate. At school, I saw many heirs whose comportment put even George to shame. As long as no respectable woman was involved, their transgressions were overlooked for the sake of their family's name. Provided debts of honor were paid, debts to honest merchants could be ignored.
What matter that their children would go hungry? Shoulders falling, he paced again. But nothing has the power to make a tradesman's son the equal of those curs.
Now you question those values?
Darcy hunched and looked away.
You were born a Darcy. That makes you a better man than your tenant, Mr. Martin?
So I was taught.
Perhaps, Bradley shuffled to his side, you were born a Darcy because you lack the strength to have been born a Martin.